Good morning, everyone. Where did we stop last time? Okay, I'll read a few lines then. Bottom line of page 50. And here it says, she, this is the earth goddess, the consciousness of the earth embodied in our planet, involved in this adventure through time. Alarmed by the sorrow dragging at her feet, and conscious of the high things not yet won, ever she nurses in her sleepless breast an inward urge that takes from her rest and peace. Ignorant and weary and invincible, she seeks through the soul's war and quivering pain the pure perfection her marred nature needs, a breath of Godhead on her stone and mire, a faith she craves that can survive defeat, the sweetness of a love that knows not death, the radiance of a truth forever sure. A light grows in her. She assumes a voice. Her state she learns to read, and the act she has done. But the one needed truth eludes her grasp, herself, and all of which she is the sign. An inarticulate whisper drives her steps, of which she feels the force, but not the sense. A few rare intimations come as guides. Immense divining flashes cleave her brain, and sometimes, in her hours of dream and muse, the truth that she has missed looks out on her as if far off and yet within her soul. A change comes near that flees from her surmise and, ever postponed, compels attempt and hope, yet seems too great for mortal hope to dare. A vision meets her of supernal powers that draw her as if mighty kinsmen lost, approaching with estranged, great, luminous gaze. Then is she moved to all that she is not, and stretches arms to what was never hers, outstretching arms to the unconscious void. Passionate, she prays to invisible forms of gods, soliciting from dumb fate and toiling time what most she needs, what most exceeds her scope. A mind unvisited by illusion's gleams, a will expressive of soul's deity, a strength not forced to stumble by its speed, a joy that drags not sorrow as its shade. For these she yearns and feels them destined hers. Heaven's privilege she claims as her own right. Just is her claim. The all-witnessing gods approve, clear in a greater light than reason owns. Our intuitions are its title deeds. Our souls accept what our blind thoughts refuse. Earth's
winged chimeras, are truth's steeds in heaven, the impossible, God's sign of things to be. Shall we start at the top today? Would you like to read? Yes. From the last line on page 50.
Alarmed by the sorrow dragging at your feet, and conscious of the high things not yet won, ever she nurses in her sleepless breast an inward urge that takes from her rest. Ignorant and weary and invincible, she seeks through the soul's war and quivering pain. The pure perfection her marred nature needs, a breath of Godhead on her stolen mind. A faith she craves that can survive defeat. The sweetness of a love that knows no, not death. The radiance of a truth forever sure.
Thank you. So Sri Aurobindo is showing us the earth, our ancient mother, as a conscious being, a goddess, who has accepted this incarnation in the planet, the globe that we call Earth, Mother Earth. He's shown her to us toiling across the sands of time. Such a long, weary journey. In the painting that the mother asked Huta to make, she shows this journey, coiling journey, and on the route, the little developments in evolution, the plants and the animals, following the earth goddess on her journey. Where she goes, they spring up. But here he says that she's alarmed by the sorrow that's always dragging at her feet. Walking across sand is very wearying sometimes, and the sands of time, it's a real toil, and it's as if something, all this pain and suffering is holding her back. But she's conscious of all the high things not yet won, the future possibilities not yet manifested. So she doesn't sleep. Always within her, there's this urge driving her forward. It takes from her rest and peace. And elsewhere in the poem, Sri Aurobindo says, that is why we also need rest and peace. Peace. She doesn't let us rest. She's carrying us along with her. This urge is in us too. At the present stage of evolution, she's ignorant. And it's wearying. She's been going on for such a long time. But still, she's invincible. She can't be conquered. She will go on until she triumphs. But what she's seeking through all this war of the soul, this quivering pain, she's seeking the pure perfection her marred nature needs. Marred means wounded or spoiled in some way. What does she need? A breath of Godhead on her stone and mire. This is the material, the stone and the mud. Mire is dirty mud. So what she's craving is a faith that can survive all defeat, the sweetness of a love that knows not death. Here in the material world, everything has to die. No? But she's looking forward to a love that is immortal. She's longing for the radiance, the light of a truth forever sure. Our little transient truths are not enough for her. She wants a truth forever sure.
Yes. It is from my understanding so far the soul is for me carrying the immortal part of us, and here he mentioned it's a soul's war and human pain. So
So the soul, of the earth, our souls, we are following this long, weary, painful journey of evolution, in this adventure of unconsciousness becoming conscious. And so things are not always peaceful and easy for the soul. The soul has to battle against all kinds of forces, sorrow dragging at our feet, the faith that fades, the love that dies, all these things. Is it okay?
In what way is she ignorant?
Her present state of consciousness, our present state of consciousness, is ignorant. It's less than true knowledge. We have a certain amount. We're not unconscious. Not.
Right, but this is referring to Earth Goddess.
Yes, but we are part of her. Her consciousness is our consciousness. She's waiting for us to develop a higher consciousness. At the moment, all she's got is this.
Earlier he's referring to her nescient course.
That's the course in matter. But here now, in the next sentence, he's going to say that she does, a light does grow in her. Who will read that bhakti?
The light grows in her. She consumes her words. A state she loves to be in the act she has done. But the one needed to be loves her grasp, herself and all of which she is the sign. And in a great wisdom drives her steps, of which she feels the force but not the sense. Their inclinations come as guides. Immense divining flashes fills her brain. And sometimes in the hours of dream and mood, the fruit that she has missed looks out on her, as if far and yet within her soul. A change comes near that flees from her sunrise, and ever goes on it, compels and hope, yet seems too great for mortal hope to death.
Yes. In the course of evolution, a light has grown. Mind has emerged. Human mind has emerged. Speech has emerged. She assumes a voice, a conscious voice, a way of communicating among her creatures. The mind allows her and us to look at ourselves and assess our state and see what we have done. But the one needed truth eludes her grasp. She's not able to seize hold of that truth, the truth of herself and what everything of which she is the sign. What does she represent? But there's this whisper, this voice, this inward urge, which is driving her forward. She feels the force, the commanding force behind that whisper, but she doesn't know what it means. What is it saying? What is the sense of that whisper that's driving her forward? At best, a few rare intimations come as guides, flashes, intuitions, hints, sometimes even for special people, these immense divining flashes cleave the brain. Some kind of powerful knowledge comes. And sometimes, as he's described in the first section, in her hours of dream and muse, the truth that she has missed looks out on her as if far off and yet within her soul. That's exactly what he described to us in the first section. So she becomes vaguely aware of a change approaching, but she can't guess, she can't grasp what that change will mean. It always seems to be postponed. It's promised, but it's not coming. But still, its appeal is so powerful. It compels attempt and hope, but it seems too great for mortal hope to dare. That is our problem. We're being driven along, but that glorious future that we're being driven towards, it seems too much for us really to believe in. We have a great deal of difficulty really believing, you know, in the supramental and the new race and the divine life upon earth. It seems too great for mortal hope to dare. Yes.
But it makes me think of Mother saying that the matter is what is stubborn. I mean, our matter does not want to change.
Well, it finds it very difficult to change.
Yes.
It's inert. That's its nature. No?
So that's always when I'm reading this.
Yes, right. Yes. And yet, these intimations do come, sometimes even these peak experiences. There may be a tremendous, powerful flash of light that just overwhelms this gray matter here, or brings some powerful experience that can't be forgotten, that leaves a huge white stamp upon our lives. But still, it's not enough. Not enough yet. So, Danya.
Vision gives her of supernal forms that draw her as if mighty kings and lost, approaching with a strange, great, luminous gaze. Then is she moved to all that she is not, and presses arms to what was never hers, outstretching arms to the unconscious void. Passionate she prays to the invisible forms of God, soliciting from down faith and toiling time. What most she needs, what most exceeds her scope, a mind unvisited by illusions being, a wing expressive of soul's guiding, a strength not forced to stumble like its speed, a joy that drops not sorrow as it shades.
Let's pause there. This is the aspiration of the earth consciousness, the earth goddess. She gets this vision of supernal powers. Often when Sri Aurobindo refers to powers like this, he means the instrumentation of the soul, of the spirit. So, matter, body, life, mind. And these have their supernal counterparts in the higher consciousness. So it's as if the earth is becoming aware of those high possibilities. And they feel so close, as if they are close relatives that she has been estranged from. Nowadays we hear such touching stories about twins who have been separated at birth or shortly afterwards, being able to track each other down and meet each other in adult life and feeling the great closeness and affinity and something that they've been missing all their lives. It's something like that when the earth becomes aware of these higher powers. They're her kinsmen. They are so close to her. No? And that intensifies her aspiration. Then is she moved to all that she is not, all that lies beyond her scope.
What does it mean, moved?
Moved. Yes, it's emotion, yeah. But it's also a dynamic emotion, no? A longing. It moves you to a longing. So then she tries to reach what seems to have been never hers, and yet it's her right. No? Passionate, she prays, she outstretches arms to the unconscious void, out to space, no? The emptiness. Prays passionately to invisible forms of gods. She can't see those divine powers. But what she's begging for, soliciting from dumb fate, which seems so fixed and unresponsive, and toiling time, which is taking such a long time to bring about change. No? What she's begging for is what she most needs, and what is most beyond her reach, beyond her scope, a mind unvisited by illusions, gleams. Our ignorant mind is all the time being visited by these gleams, attractive or unattractive, of illusion that don't represent true knowledge. She needs a mind that is not visited by those illusory gleams. She needs a will that can really express the divinity of the soul, a strength that's not forced to stumble by its speed. Sometimes we come across great heroic beings who strive to help the world to move forward quickly. But since they are human beings and they're hampered by matter and all the other obstructions, when they try to go very fast, then there's often a fall. They're forced by their own speed to stumble. And the other thing that she needs is a joy that drags not sorrow as its shade. All earthly joy seems to have a shadow of sorrow inevitably attached to it. No?
When you explain, I listen but not fully about when you tell twins, soul of twins.
Well, here the image is of Earth becoming aware of the divine powers, as if they are members of her family that she's been separated from for a long time. So just as a comparison, I mentioned that these days we sometimes hear about children who are separated at birth or shortly afterwards. And then when they grow up, they learn that, oh, I had a brother or a sister, and they make great efforts, and nowadays it's possible they can trace those kinsmen they have lost. No? And often it's a very joyful reunion and rediscovery. But it's only an example that Sri Aurobindo says, that this kinship between the powers of earth, matter, life, mind, they are very closely connected to the upper powers, sat, chit, tapas, ananda. They are mighty kinsmen, but the earth having descended into the involution, into the unconscious, has lost touch with those mighty kinsmen of hers. But when she becomes aware that they exist, then this aspiration comes, then she's moved to come into contact with what she has lost.
Shiva.
Yes.
We know that Shiva, Kali and Durga came to Mother. She took the mind, body and life.
Yes.
She was so close to Mother Earth. Did Mother Earth make an effort to reach our mother for this mission?
Yes, I think so. No, the Mother tells us about a moment when, well, There's a moment in the agenda when Mother was going through a very difficult time physically, and material nature came and offered her protection and refuge. But also one of her messages from the 1950s, I think, she says that Mother Nature has understood and has agreed to collaborate, and with her collaboration, then what is impossible?
Mother also said that the earth, that where we are now sitting, yeah, had an aspiration.
Right.
So that could be Mother Earth.
Surely, yes, yes. Yes, Audrey.
It won't last.
That is our earth experience. That's the experience of the earth up to now. But this dream is there, no? The earth consciousness in us is dreaming of these things that we haven't got yet. A mind not visited by illusions gleams. A will that's expressive of soul's deity. We may feel that we want to serve the divine will and obey the divine guidance, but this ordinary human will is just not up to it, no? It's not able to express that. A strength that's not forced to stumble by its speed, and above all, a joy that drags not sorrow as its shade. We are all longing for these things.
I think that the mind doesn't want to give us the freedom, no? Because the mind is taking care. We are doing what the mind says. And if we really come into the other thing, the mind is appealing. I think that doesn't want. That's my feeling. When I talk to her, I say, there, okay.
Yes, the mind at the moment is the leader of our consciousness. But the mind is also being driven from behind by the soul, by the aspiration. Yeah. Elena.
For this, she knows and feels there is a sign. So given privilege, she claims as her own right. Just as she claims that all witnessing goes through. Clear in a greater light that reason owns. Our intuition are its title deeds. Our souls accept what our blind thoughts refuse. Earth, vintage, chemicals, and truth sits in heaven. The impossible gold sign of things to be.
Thank you. In the earth consciousness and in us, there's a yearning for all these things. In the first chapter of The Life Divine, Sri Aurobindo refers to the human aspiration, which just can't be eradicated, can't be eradicated by common sense or rationality or anything like that. Earth consciousness, we are yearning for these perfections, and we feel that they should be ours. I think all human beings are carrying these intuitions in them, claiming heaven's privilege, a perfect life, perfect bliss, perfect strength, perfect knowledge, perfect power. That's the privilege of heaven, the higher levels consciousness. But Earth feels that it's her right to have them too. That seems too much for mortal hope to dare. But here he says that the all-witnessing gods, the cosmic powers, approve. They say, yes, she is right. She should have all these things. That claim of hers is absolutely clear in a greater light than reason owns. to the reason they look extravagant and impossible and unreasonable. But in a greater light, it's absolutely clear that Earth is destined to have all these things. Our intuitions, our feelings that we should, that these things exist and are possible and should be ours, these are the title deeds, the documents, the proof that they belong to Earth, that they should come to her. And our souls accept these intuitions, although the blind thoughts say, no, no, come on, too much, unreasonable. So things that on Earth seem to be chimeras, impossible fantasies. The chimera is one of these Greek mythological animals. I'm not sure what the head is like. The body is like a winged lion. And I've forgotten. It's one of these composite animals. But of course, these are symbolic things. Yes, please tell us about chimeras, Claude.
At the very beginning of the manifestation, there was Typhon, which is considered of unicorns, which united with Echidna, which is a viper, which is a wrong evolution perverted. And there are four monsters, which is opposite in each field, and like the four asuras, which turn. And so one is Kerberos, the inverse of which keeps death, inverse of life. One is Desire, which is a Earth-first Hermian, Lernian idol. Third one is the Chimera,
yes,
which is in the mind world, which is the opposite of the mind world. And the last one is the opposite of Truth, which is the Orthos.
Is the what?
The opposite of Truth, which is the Orthos. Orthos with the inverse, Orthos. So that's the first big monsters at the beginning.
Yes. Could you write me a little essay on that, Claude?
Yeah, sure.
We could publish that in Invocation. It's very interesting. Thank you. So the thing about the chimera is that it's an impossible animal with wings. Yeah, and we use this word to mean an impossible fantasy, an imaginary something. Chimera, complete chimera, illusory, can't possibly exist. But he says here that in heaven, these apparently impossible formations are the vehicles, the steeds, the horses that truth rides, that carry truth. And as Mother has also told us, the impossible is God's sign of things to be, when we feel that something is impossible. I think Mother even says it's the beginning of all possibility. Because the fact that you've thought of something and you think, no, no, impossible. It means that that dream or vision or whatever it is has entered into your realm of awareness. And that's the beginning of its actual manifestation. The impossible is God's sign of things to be, things that will be in the future.
I was thinking of the man from La Mancha.
Yes.
They made a movie, it was a book, and they did make a movie, to dream the impossible, to fall for no one else, but I just think it's a long time ago.
Yes. So it's the same idea. You know, somebody who's quixotic, he believes in chimeras, no? But it's somehow a noble dream.
Sherwin says the sense of impossibility is the beginning of all possibilities.
Yeah. All possibles, I think, no? All possibilities? Yeah. Tomoko. Will you read? Line 220.
But few can look beyond the present state, for overly is matted hedge of things. All that transpires on earth and all beyond breath of truth that work unseen. The laws of the unknown create the known.
Thank you. So few of us can look beyond our present human state, our present human consciousness. We can't jump over this matted hedge of sense. It's like our physical senses, which tell us about the world around us, that's like a hedge. Confines us, limits us. A few people can leap over that hedge of sense impressions and experience another reality.
Matted.
The rishis, you know, they don't comb their hair, it becomes matted. So if you have a matted hedge, it's all grown, all the plants are grown together, you can't push your way through, you would have to leap over it. Yes, matted hair, when you can't possibly put a comb through it anymore, it's become completely like a mat. You see people with hair like that sometimes, carefully cultivated. But then he assures us that everything that transpires on earth, everything that happens on earth, and everything that happens beyond, everything, all are parts of an illimitable plan. There is a plan. It's an infinite, eternal plan, illimitable. The One, the Lord, is keeping that in His heart, and He's the only one who knows that plan. But what happens to us outwardly are results of something that's grown from a seed within us. Things happen to us and we wonder why this random fate, dreadful things seem to happen just for no reason. That is fate imitating chance, looking as if it's random and meaningless. But he says, even this mass of unintelligible results that we simply cannot understand, are the dumb graph of truths that work unseen. A graph is a diagram in which points are made or bars are made indicating things that have happened, values. So these things that happen, they are indications of truths that are working unseen behind the veil. This world that we know in our way has been created by the laws of the unknown, not the physical laws, not even the psychological laws that operate here on the surface. Something much deeper, the laws of the unknown. Rosa? Yes. Sorry.
You read up to 219. After that, are you going to read properly with the proper pronunciation? Or is it too much to ask? It helps us, helps me, because I read along with you.
So I read to the impossible God's sign of things to be. But there are other good readers here.
But
Paula, you can read.
Yeah.
You like to read?
There's a question here.
Yes.
There was a question.
What was the question? She remembered. So.
Okay, what was your question?
What we can think about this law of unknown.
The laws of the unknown. Well, Sri Aurobindo speaks about the logic of the infinite. Maybe something like that.
So it's also a contradiction.
At least he says that in a couple of places. No, infinity is not random. There's freedom, but there's a logic,
and
which is different.
Also
It's unknown, unknown to us. Even the unknowable, he says. You know, it's an expression for the ultimate mystery, the unknowable. But he says, actually, it's only unknowable to the mind. There are parts of us which can respond to, understand the laws, even of the unknowable, the logic of the infinite.
It's not the same that the possible is the impossible, or the unknowing.
It's not the same.
Is there? Paula. But few can look beyond the present state or overleap this matted hedge of sense.
No, go on.
All that transpires on earth and all beyond are parts of an illimitable plan the one keeps in his heart and knows alone. Our outward happenings have their seed within, and even this random fate that imitates chance, this mass of unintelligible results, are the dumb graph of truths that work unseen. The laws of the unknown create the known.
Please continue.
The events that shape the appearance of our lives are a cipher of subliminal quiverings, which rarely we surprise or vague, are an outcome of suppressed realities that hardly rise into material day. They are born from the spirit's sun of hidden powers, digging a tunnel through emergency. But who shall pierce into the cryptic gulf and learn what deep necessity of the soul determined casual deed and consequence? Absorbed in a routine of daily acts, our eyes are fixed on an external scene. We hear the crash of the wheels of circumstance and wonder at the hidden cause of things. Yet a foreseeing knowledge might be ours if we could take our spirit's stand within. If we could hear the muffled daemon voice, too seldom is the shadow of what must come, cast in an instant on the secret sense, which feels the shock of the invisible, and seldom in the few who answer, give the mighty process of the cosmic will, communicates its image to our sight, identifying the world's mind with ours. Our range is fixed within the crowded arc of what we observe and touch and thought can guess, and rarely dawns the light of the unknown, waking in us the prophet and the seer. The outward and the immediate are our field. The dead past is our background and support. Mind keeps the soul prisoner. We are slaves to our acts. We cannot free our gaze to reach wisdom's sun.
Thank you. So we can go back to line 230 and look a bit more closely. Rosa. Realities. Hmm. This is quite a mysterious sentence, no? For our lives are shaped by events, things that just happen. They shape the appearance, the outer appearance of our lives. But he says that these events are a cipher, a coded language of subliminal quiverings, small movements that happen below the threshold of consciousness. Very rarely we might might catch one of those subliminal quiverings, or we might vaguely feel something inward. No? Those events are an outcome of suppressed realities, realities that are not working freely on the surface. They are suppressed. They hardly emerge into our material daylight life. And these subliminal quiverings and suppressed realities are born from the spirit's son of hidden powers digging a tunnel through emergency. Something is boring underground. The spirit's son of hidden powers. It's a tremendous light full of energy and power that is digging underground, digging a tunnel, a passage through emergency. This word we usually think of as, the emergency room in the hospital. So something happens, some danger that has to be dealt with immediately. But I think that here it doesn't mean that exactly. I think that it's connected with the idea of emergence. There are things that are coming into manifestation. Can you speak up? Yes.
But it says suppressed realities.
Yes. So
they are outcome of suppressed realities. Who is suppressing?
Who's suppressing them? Well, I guess it's our outward consciousness that keeps all these things hidden. We have these different levels to our consciousness. Normally we are just here on the surface awareness, whether it's physical or vital or mental. But Shobindo says we have an inner subtle physical, an inner life force, and inner mind. And things are going on there in the subliminal. Limen is the Latin word for a threshold. So in psychology, this word subliminal, it doesn't mean things that are completely unconscious. It means things that are below the threshold of our normal waking awareness. In special circumstances, they may emerge and we may become aware of them. And he says those inner mind, life, body, that being is in touch also with universal powers and realities. So all these things together are digging this tunnel through what is emerging on the surface. Devan, you will read?
But who shall pierce into the cryptic gulf and learn what deep necessity of the soul determines casual deed and consequence? Absorbed in the routine of daily acts, our eyes are fixed on an external scene. We hear the crash of the wheels of circumstance and wonder at the hidden cause of things. Yet a foreseeing knowledge might be ours. If we could take our spirit stand within, if we could hear the muffled demon voice. Too seldom is the shadow of what must come cast in an instant on the secret sense, which feels the shock of the invisible, and self mighty process of the cosmic wave communicates its image to our sight, identifying the world's mind with ours.
Thank you. Yes.
I find the formulation interesting, identifying the world's mind with ours.
Mm.
Usually, we would say identifying our mind to the world, and here's the other universal perspective.
Yes. But it's basically the same thing.
Yes.
Mm? Yeah. It's a connection, a union between the individual mind and the universal mind. Mm. So he's, I think in this passage which we've just read, he's illustrating the line, the laws of the unknown create the known. So the events that shape the appearance of our lives are a coded translation or expression of things that are going on under the threshold, subliminal quiverings and suppressed realities. And these things born because of this tunneling of the spirit sun of him powers, which is making things emerge on the surface. But who's going to see all that happening? Who's going to become aware of those causes? Who shall pierce into the cryptic gulf, into that mysterious deep places, to learn what deep necessity of the soul has determined things that seem to happen just like that, casual deeds and their consequences. We are absorbed in our routine of daily acts and our eyes are fixed on an external scene. So of course we do hear the crash of the wheels of circumstance, this great tank moving forward, creating big effects in the world, and we may wonder at the hidden cause of things. Things often happen in the world and we wonder, my God, why did that have to happen? Why is it like that? But he says we could have a foreseeing knowledge. We have the possibility of seeing the causes of things and seeing what will be the results. If we could take our spirit's stand within, instead of identifying always up here. No? If we could hear, there's a voice from within which is telling us things, the muffled daemon voice. We use this word because Sophocles used it. No? He said, I have to obey my daemon. No? He had a guidance. So the shadow of what must come does cast itself, is cast on our inner secret sense that feels the shock of the invisible. Something in us can tell what is coming, what is happening. No? But few people respond to that. There are a few who give an answer, who respond to that shock. No? But even in the few who do respond, only seldom does the mighty process of the cosmic will communicate its image to our sight. It's very rare, no, that there's this shared seeing of the individual mind and the universal mind.
I think Sherwin has written that line in that order because it is the choice of the cosmic will to communicate. And when it starts, when it is initiated by the cosmic.
Right, Patty. Thank you. That's right.
What could you say? Would you repeat it?
She said the order of the words here.
Yeah.
It's identifying the mind's world with ours. It's the process of the cosmic will chooses to communicate with us. The initiative is not ours. It communicates with us. Is that right, Patty?
Yes. That's what he says. The mighty process of the cosmic will communicates its image to our sight.
Mm. identifying the world as mind with us. Yeah. Thank you. I think that's where we should stop for today, unless anybody has some burning question. We can listen to Mother reading a few passages. Thanks to Shobindo.